Thank you. We're joined this week by Maureen Moakley, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Rhode Island, Ed Fitzpatrick from the Boston Globe, and our special guest is the Chief Strategist for the Rhode Island Democratic Party, Kate Coyne McCoy. Thank you all for joining us. Kate Coyne McCoy, I'd like to start with how, when I broke the news in March that you were hired as the chief strategist for the Democratic Party in Rhode Island, it was seen as a leftward move for the party. There are some progressive Democrats, though, who question that now, and they point to how the party under your leadership is implementing the use of a critical software known as the Voter Action Network. This is used by candidates when they're on the campaign trail to compile voter lists and things like that. What is the rationale for the Democratic Party wanting to have access to the information of individual candidates in exchange for allowing them to have access to this software?
We're in a Trumpian world. there's facts and there's lies. And if you tell a lie enough times, it doesn't become a fact. So here are the facts. The Voter Action Network, or VAN, is a Democratic Party tool designed and implemented and maintained by the Democratic Party in Washington, by the DNC, and shared with the Rhode Island Party in a cooperative agreement. We are giving it to every single registered Democrat who signs the contract for it and who asks for it. That is new. That is that no one will be denied access to the Voter Action Network. We are not taking personal candidate information off the voter file. There is a firewall that prevents the party from doing that. There will only be one person, the new data director for the party, who will have access to the back end of the VAN for purposes of maintenance and cleaning and so forth. But the negativity that you're hearing, the lies that you're hearing about how we are implementing the new policy for VAN are just that. They're lies. And they're being spread by people who are afraid, who rightly so feel suspicious. And, there's an absence of trust between the party and some progressive folks. But there's a lot of progressive folks who are very happy about the fact that they're going to get a better product at a cheaper price that will afford them many more tools than they currently have.
How do you reconcile your profile as a progressive woman with taking on this lead role with a state Democratic Party that, at least in the view of some people, has been hostile in the past to the interest of progressive women in Rhode Island?
This isn't about me. And, you know, I think that people, when they hear my name, many people think they know what I'm going to say before I say it. There's a perception about me. I am a very, very progressive personally, but this isn't about me. I've been hired to modernize an antiquated system that is not working for candidates in Rhode Island. I've worked in 45 states. I've worked all over the world in campaigns. I know what a Democratic Party organization looks like and what it should look like and how it should work. And I've been hired to build that in Rhode Island. This is a big tent here. We don't have a purity test. We don't all look the same. We don't all vote the same. I am going to build a party that has I describe it as a big house. I'm building a big house with lots of rooms that is going to have all the tools and expertise it needs to elect candidates up and down the ballot.
Let's go to Ed.
In 2019, the Women's Caucus broke away, as you know, from the Rhode Island Democratic Party to form an independent group called the Rhode Island Democratic Women's Caucus. That would they could endorse their own candidates, spend money, make statements without the chairman's approval. Are you making any efforts to bridge the gap with the Women's Caucus or perhaps even bring them back into the party organization?
Women are a fundamental component of Democratic politics. I have devoted the bulk of my career to recruiting, training, and supporting Democratic pro-choice women to election all across the country. So, yes, I think what happened is tragic. I'm hoping that over the course of time that the Women's Caucus would be able to come back, would see their way back to the party. you know, there are ways to operate and ways not to operate. Again, we have no purity. This is a big tent. I'm trying to build the most robust, productive, efficient, successful party organization that I can.
Let's go to Maureen.
Given the success of the progressive agenda in the state so far, is there a danger that the Democratic Party per se is moving too far for the left? As you noted, there's a sizable cadre of legislators that are more moderate and conservative, as well as voters. How do you have their voices heard? How do you intend to strike this balance?
Because it's my intention to hear every voice inside the party. I started the job with a long list of every legislator, and I have slowly marshaled my way through. I think I'm about almost done speaking to every senator, and probably a third of the way through the House. I'm talking to the Dot Corvaces and the Rebecca Kislaks and the Sam Bells and the Joe Shikarchis. I'm talking to them all. And I ask them how the party can be most helpful to them. The party in Rhode Island has never had a robust data operation, a robust campaign service that can be deployed to campaigns. And that's my goal. That's what I'm going to build.
Kate Coyne McCoy, we can remember back in 2018, there were some big controversies about Democratic endorsements. Probably the most notable one was a former Republican who had supported President Trump in 2016, got the endorsement over a progressive representative, Maura Walsh from Providence. I know this happened at the district level rather than the state party level, but it was not lost on many that Maura Walsh was a big critic of the then Speaker Nicholas Mattiello. So what is happening within the party to avoid these kind of questionable endorsements that have happened in the past?
You know, I haven't gotten down to the district level yet. That is certainly, there's just not that many hours in the day between April 1st and today when I started. I was horrified by that action, by Democrats endorsing a Republican over a Democrat. I would hope, I know that this is a new day, right? And that the current leadership is not the old leadership. And there's a great deal more transparency and I think forthrightness in this current leadership for the very first time in my lifetime, in my political involvement in Rhode Island. The Senate and the House are on equal footing in the party, and that is because the House Speaker has made that clear that I need to operate in that way.
Let's go to Maureen.
I'd like to ask you about things that are going on in the party at the national level. Given the institutional changes that the Democrats are proposing, expanding the Supreme Court, stopping the filibuster, do you think this is going to be the new normal insofar as when Republicans get into power, they too will continue to adjust the institutional process to meet their partisan ends?
I mean, both parties have done governmental and regulatory tweaks since the beginning of time to suit their own purposes. I don't have a position and I don't claim to know what the Democrats at the national level are doing with regard to the filibuster.
Expanding the Supreme Court is not a tweak. It's a fundamental change. And do you see this as just as a citizen, as this continuing, where does it end?
I don't know where it ends. I agree with you. It's not the Supreme Court alterations are fundamental. I don't know enough about the process and where it is to make an opinion about that today. I just don't. I've been very, very focused on moving my business to Rhode Island and building a new Democratic Party here.
Let's go to Ed.
As Maureen mentioned, the legislative session so far has seen a lot of action on progressive issues like climate change, housing discrimination, minimum wage. What do you attribute that to? Is that having a new House Speaker? Is it the election of more progressives? Do you see that trend continuing? And will you be standing in the way if you're working for incumbents who are facing progressive challenges?
No, I really see it, Ed, as representing your constituency. It is clear that the constituencies in Rhode Island were in favor of raising the minimum wage and engaging in climate and sea level rise protections. I forget what the third one you said, but it, for me, it's about representing your constituency. Doc Corvese, who I don't agree with Doc Corvese on one thing that I can think of. But he represents his constituency. He is elected by his constituency. You know, whoever the most sort of liberal member of the House and the Senate, they represent their constituency. And so you want to take on the issue, those issues, you've got to take on that constituency. You've got to educate them. You've got to communicate with them. You've got to not ignore them. You've got to talk to them in the out year and the on year. You know, for me, it comes down to letting the voters decide and running a straightforward campaign with all the resources and tools at your disposal so that you can mobilize the voters who can get you elected.
Just to follow up, are you saying you think the constituency in Rhode Island has changed, become more progressive, or is it just who's up at the State House?
No, I do think that I think that the current leadership in the State House has listened to their constituency, both at the leadership level and at the rank and file level, in a closer way than previous leaderships. Joe Ciccarci is not Nick Mattiello. This is a different ballgame.
One final question for you, Kate Coyne McCoy. One of the strange things about Democrats in Rhode Island is how they tend to be very strong supporters of gun rights. We can see how they've been unwilling to support the ban on new sales of semi-automatic rifles that Massachusetts has. You have lobbied in favor of some of these restrictions in the past. Why is it that there's this strong cohort of Rhode Island Democrats who are such strong supporters of gun rights in a way that's different from their counterparts in other states?
Again, I think because they're representing their constituency. Where I live in Scituate, you know, Burrville, Foster, West Greenwich, there are pockets of Rhode Island where the overwhelming majority of people probably have guns, are surely pro-gun supporters. You know, I support the Second Amendment, but I have fought for 30 years for common sense gun control. It is clear that the majority of voters in Rhode Island are for common sense gun control, like aggressive background checks, a ban on assault weapons, high capacity magazines. We pass red flag laws. I mean, but those leaders are representing their constituency. And you can change those leaders, but you've got to find someone who is going to do the right kind of campaign, who's going to use all the tools available and mobilize enough of their constituency to get themselves elected.
That's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Thank you for joining us, Maureen.
Thank you.
From the Boston Globe, Ed Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Ian.
And the chief strategist for the Rhode Island Democratic Party, Kate Coyne McCoy.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It was fun.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.